for a reason.
That's a troublemaker sitting next to you.
Good morning. If the board members can gather, please. So what I'd like to do is bring the Forest Practices Board to order. This is August 9, 2017. It's our regular board meeting. We've got a packed agenda today. We're planning on spending all morning on water typing. There is going to be a slight change in the agenda this morning in that there will be no staff recommendations around PHBs. And as soon as Hans and the panel have talked about what they did this morning, we will go into, and the board has had a chance to clarify, ask clarifying questions about what was done, then I'd like to take us into public comment at that point. The other thing is I'm looking for our supervisor. Is Megan here? Okay, we'll catch her when she gets in here. Patricia, would you like to start off by doing the safety briefing, please?
Sure. Good morning, and welcome to the Natural Resources Building. Please silence any noise-making devices you have. In the event of a fire, our alarms will sound and flash. In the event of an earthquake, alarms may not sound and flash. Please drop to the floor and cover your head as best as you can, or go under a table. In any evacuation of the building, staff will lead you out of the building using the double doors in the front of the room. Then the first door on your left, moving east towards the grassy area along Jefferson Street. Once there, DNR employees are trained and equipped to assist you in checking in and responding to any injuries. I'm not done. In the event of a building lockdown, staff will communicate the situation to everyone in the room and proceed to secure the room by turning off the lights, closing the blinds, and locking all doors. Please remain quiet and make sure you silence your phones and your laptops. Remove yourself away from doors and windows, and DNR staff will announce when the situation has cleared. Thank you.
Memorized by now.
Thank you, Patricia. She actually had some additions there.
I did too.
And it wasn't really funny, but we actually had an active shooter on campus a few weeks ago during our subcommittee meeting, and we had to do the practice. And I want to thank Fish and Wildlife for helping us get through that. So, appreciate that. So, what I'd like to do is note a couple of things. Lisa Janicki is not going to be able to be here today. Lisa's son, Patrick, had cardiac arrest last week, and he's in the hospital, and so family is focusing on that. And I'm passing around a card around to board members to sign so that we can let Lisa know that their family is in our thoughts and prayers. Second, Tom Morey can't be here also today, but Maya Bellum has designated Rich Dungis as the ecology designee today. And so with that, with Heather, board member Balish, would you please lead off with introductions?
Heather Balish, Department of Commerce, Director's designee.
Good morning, I'm Noah Willett. I'm the Timber Products Union Representative.
Bob Gunther, I represent small landowners and public member.
Morning, I'm Joe Storr. I'm the Director of Fish and Wildlife's designee.
Good morning, I'm Paula Sweeney, General Public Member.
Stephen Renaff, the Commissioner of Public Lands designee.
Good morning, Rich Stenges, designee for the Department of Ecology.
Good morning, I'm Tom Nelson, General Public Member.
Carmen Smith, Arl Smith Logging, Contract Logger designee.
Patrick Napper, I'm the Director's designee at the Washington State Department of Agriculture.
Brent Davis, a General Public Member.
Good morning, I'm Dave Herrera. I'm a General Public Member.
Thank you. Staff, please.
Good morning, I'm Joe Schrammick, DNR Forest Practices Division Manager.
Phil Ferrister, Senior Counsel, Attorney General's Office.
Good morning, Mark Engel, Forest Practices Assistant Division Manager.
Trisha Anderson, Department of Natural Resources.
Thank you. So, I'd like to move into review of the minutes from the May, both the meetings on May 9th and 10th. So could I have entertain a motion? Thank you, Board Member Gunther. Second. Board Member Willett.
Discussion on the minutes on the May 9th and the May 10th. It's no Bill Little as a timber product union representative, and that should be Noel Willett.
Thank you, Noel.
It also has Court Stanley as a timber.
Oh, thank you.
It's okay by me, but you cited me as saying things in here, which I wasn't listening.
Okay, that's embarrassing on our part. So I didn't catch whether we had a second before we got
we
any
didn't
discussion.
Have a second, but I would approve the minutes as amended.
Any other comments regarding the minutes from May 9th and 10th? No? All in favor of approving the minutes as amended, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion passes. Okay, I'd like to go into general public comment, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. This morning I'd like to invite you to Eastern Washington for a board field trip. I think it's been quite a while since the board has been on the east side of the state, and it's high time we get you back there for a tour. And so I will commit to work with DNR staff on behalf of the Kalispell tribe and the other Eastern Washington tribes to put together a meaningful field trip to go over east side issues and the board at your convenience.
Thank you. Appreciate that, Ray.
No problem.
Anybody who meant to sign up but didn't? Going, gone. Okay. Let's get into the. Report from the chair. I wanted to let everybody know, as you know, on June 30th, the legislature and the governor signed into law the operating budget. The good news for forest practices was we were fearing over $1 million cut to our operating budget, but that didn't actually materialize in the final budget. So that was good news and good work on everybody's part to support the program. The AMP budget also came across with the amount of money we needed. However, as has happened in the last session, we, because we have a fund balance, because we're not spending as we'd hope, there was a fund swap. So we lost some of our general fund state money and the balance from the forced and fish support account was used to make up for that. So it's a net zero gain, but so we're good for this year. In the next biennium, we're going to have to make sure that we have the right amount of money in the budget. And I have assurances from OFM that they will work with us on that. As you've seen in the news the last few days in particular, there is no capital budget. That does affect forced practices. As you know, the FREP program and the ROS program are both capital budget items. We spent all our money last biennium on those programs, and so we have no money to spend on that at this point in time until there's some agreement across the street on a capital budget. On FFFP, there was a little bit left over, and that's been reappropriated. So we are able to keep one of our FTEs on board for the next year or until the capital budget moves forward. So I just wanted to make people aware of what's going on there. One of the agenda items you probably didn't anticipate, and we failed to note at the last meeting, there was a House Bill 1595 that amended the Public Records Act, passed towards the end of the session. It has changed the fees regarding what agencies can charge for public records requests. And so you will see later in our agenda that we will be asking you to take action to start a rulemaking process so that we can be in compliance with the new statute. And finally, I just want to let everybody know what's going on with the cultural resources issue. It's sort of been on a slow bake. there is a leadership letter being prepared to send out to everybody involved, the landowners, the tribes, and of course the state, in the context of DNR and the Department of Historic Preservation, Archaeological and Historic Preservation. Leadership is signing this letter, inviting everybody to a policy level meeting to see if we can get the momentum going again to have a policy buy-off to move forward on the different items that Tim shared with you at the last board meeting. So that's sort of what's going on right now on cultural resources. So with that, I'd like to take us to, and we're already ahead of schedule, yay, to the water typing business this morning. And if Phil Roney, who is VP of Kramer Fish Sciences and chair of the science panel, and Hans could come up, introduce themselves. I'd really like Hans to lead off with a reminder of the motion we passed at the last meeting regarding the science panel and working on potential habitat breaks and all the processes the science panel went through to bring the data in, what data was used, what analyses were performed, how that resulted in the recommendations that's in your packet, particularly table 3 in the report. And and also have Hans give us an update on the plan for doing a study design for rule but before the validation of PHPs. After they give their report, then I'd like the board, as I mentioned earlier, to have clarifying questions around the board, and then we'll ask for public comment. Okay.
Phil.
Hans.
Thanks.
Good morning, Chairman Bernath, members of the Forest Practices Board. My name is Hans Burge. I'm the Adaptive Management Program Administrator. And Phil has not made it yet, I think probably due to the earlier time on the agenda and the combination of parking, so hopefully Phil will be here during this presentation to help talk about some of these issues and answer any questions you may have. So the purpose of today's discussion, as you are all aware, is following the May 2017 board meeting. There was a motion that directed me to determine the elements that would constitute a barrier and or potential habitat break, and determine those physical, biological, chemical elements that would individually or in combination constitute a high probability the PHB is coincident with a significant change in habitat, including stream size, stream gradient, and the interaction of size and gradient, and the presence of barriers that limit accessibility, thus the appropriate point to start an electrofishing protocol survey. So that was the charge that was given. The way that we accomplished that was I convened a group of outside experts, as well as two internal experts on the water typing system, and then made use of a larger stakeholder group with technical representatives included there to have a dialogue at the beginning of this process to understand considerations, perspectives, places where they thought emphasis should be made from the stakeholders to the expert panel. And then the work began at that point from the expert panel, pulling together some recommendations. And on May 15th, following the board meeting, I made a call following the testimony that was presented at the board for all people that provided testimony, as well as other caucuses, to provide any data. You heard a lot in November and May that there was data that was available, specifically from landowners, but not only from landowners, that could be brought to bear to help refine some of the terms that we were interested in that I just mentioned. And so that was the call on May 15th for that information to come out. It took a while for people to pull those data together and to bring them forward. There were data sets from the U.S. Forest Service that were included. There were data sets from the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, the Fish Passive Barriers group specifically. There were data from the Wild Fish Conservancy that they had collected as part of some earlier work from CEMER and otherwise. There was data from landowners, as we talked about, in the form of concurred water type modification form data that went into that, into the water typing process. There were CEMER data from the east side that were also considered, and there were some additional 13 points from Northeast Washington where data was collected this very year. So all of those different data sets were brought forward, and the QAQC of those different data sets, we were looking for consistency in methods in describing gradient. And just welcome Dr. Phil Roney to come and sit behind. Welcome to the meeting, Phil.
I thought it was at 10.
They're ahead of schedule.
Okay. I'm sorry I'm late.
Just getting started. And so we worked on the looking at the data set, figuring out which was the right data set to use, and then did some analysis. We held meetings twice a week, Mondays and Thursdays during this time, from the middle of June until we sent it to the board, and then in between the meetings we looked at literature to share with the group. We reviewed the data sets to try to better understand what they were and what they weren't, and tried to identify what those PHBs would be. And as you can imagine, that was a difficult task to try to accomplish in a matter of 6 weeks or so. And so that was essentially what we did, and that resulted in a report that we sent out to the board. And prior to the report coming to the board, we had another check-in meeting with stakeholders. Not everyone could make it. There was a timeline issue to some degree, But we did share the same recommendations that we presented in the report with stakeholders, gave them the opportunity to ask clarifying questions and to discuss what those results meant. And there were some people that thought it made a lot of sense and some people thought that it didn't make a lot of sense, as you can imagine. And so that was where we arrived. We didn't hear any fatal flaws in what we had done. The panel considered those comments and tried to incorporate some of those pieces into elements of the report as possible, but of course not everybody's going to be happy with that. And so then the report was drafted, edited by the panel members and submitted to the board for review. And you all received it roughly 2 weeks ago, I think. And that is the process, I guess, from beginning to end, more or less, in how we got where we are today. And so Phil and I are going to give this presentation just to kind of outline some of the details around what was done. So the first point of context that I think is important to discuss is that in WAC 222-16010, type F water is fish habitat. That's the assumption that we're working with here. And then fish habitat means habitat which is used by fish at any life stage, at any time of the year, including potential habitat likely to be used by fish, which could be recovered by restoration or management, and includes off-channel habitat. Just to recap what's been done in the last couple of years on development of this water typing permanent rule, just to remind people of where we were just 2 years ago. Exactly 2 years ago at this meeting, the board adopted the water typing matrix. And those were the board motions that were done in February of 2014, I believe, to direct policy on what to do following their dispute resolution process. So the matrix was really the roadmap of how to get those things accomplished. And we added a couple of items in there. Well, one item in particular that wasn't in the board's motion, which was the evaluation of the physicals. Policy at the time felt that was an important consideration, and that as everything else in the water typing was in the mix except the physicals. So we added that to the matrix. The board adopted that 2 years ago. So the emphasis has been placed on protecting fish habitat, type F, that's what we've been trying to identify. We discussed, of course, electrofishing, ways to reduce it. That was contained in a report that we did on best practices of electrofishing, which you've all seen. We looked at off-channel habitat and making sure that we protect it. And that was a report actually senior authored by Dr. Roney here. You've also seen that. Then there's the default physical criteria, the 2 feet 20%, 2 feet 16%, or something else. And we're working on a study design to evaluate those default physical criteria. Currently, that's an active project. The model evaluation using LIDAR, we did the initial analysis, but now we're looking at a study design to understand what that would look like operationally, moving forward on LIDAR. Exactly a year ago at this meeting, you had a presentation about what Luke Rogers and the University of Washington Precision Forestry Lab had been doing on the study evaluation of LIDAR, and then that decision was made to go forward on a study design. But what was needed is this FN break criteria. So we have to come up with how to determine that FN break. And so if you recall, in May, the board adopted the policy recommended fish habitat assessment method, FHAM. We'll talk about that a little bit more in a minute. And nested within that FHAM are these PHB criteria. And so what you received in the report were the recommendations from the science panel looking at existing data, literature, and their collective experience to make recommendations on what those PHB criteria would be, with all of the caveats of time and available data and those sorts of things. They're all part of that. And that's what's being proposed today by the science panel. So then I'll talk a little bit more about the FHAMs and then turn it over to Dr. Roney. The FHAMs were developed originally from policy, starting back in November of 2016 and through December and then into January. They were submitted and then reviewed by the state, WFPA, the East Side Tribes, and the Conservation Caucus. And what the review team identified as something really important was that methodology that each one of those different proposals had were very similar, but there were details missing about the criteria and the metrics, and or they were, they were either undefined or the criteria were different between the two and where the areas of emphasis would be. So policy recommended to the board to adopt the FHAN framework, but they identified the PHB missing criteria. The board directed me through the motion to form the groups to look at PHBs, and then those are in fact the reports of what we're looking at today. And so just to reiterate, the motion was to determine those elements that would constitute a barrier and or PHB, determine those physical, biological, and chemical elements that would individually or in combination constitute a high probability of the PHB is consistent, or is coincident, excuse me, with a significant change in habitat, including stream size, stream gradient, the interaction of size and gradient, and the presence of barriers that limit accessibility, thus the appropriate point to start to initiate a protocol electrification survey.
Good morning, everybody. Hans gave you the background and overview, and I'm the representative of the panel. This was a group effort. Obviously, the goal was to develop the recommendations for the definition of PHBs. And so the first thing was to bring together a group of experts who had expertise in fish biology, geomorphology, fish habitat relationships, lots of experience in forestry issues, in particular water typing and aquatic ecology, and then obviously folks with experience in stats and research on fish habitat, particularly in small streams. So we really had a great group of scientists. We had myself, Jeff Kirshner, who's a retired fish habitat scientist from the U.S. Forest Service. Pete Bisson, who I think you probably know, is another retired Forest Service fish biologist. Brian Franson, former Weyerhaeuser. Pat Trotter, an expert on fish in headwater streams, particularly cutthroat trout. Ray Tim, a fishery scientist who also works with me. Kai Ross, who's helped us with a lot of the statistical analysis. He's a biometrician. And then Joe Maroney from Upper Columbia, correct?
Kalispell
Tribe, sorry, Joe. So the process really was three key pieces. You know, the first was to really dive into the literature on this. And the second was to look at some existing data and see if that could help us define the potential habitat breaks, test some of the criteria that we proposed. And, you know, that's all data on the end of fish habitat and uppermost fish. And then there's obviously, you know, professional opinion and our experience on this. Just a little bit more on the process. We looked through the literature and we developed some initial criteria, and we did this data analysis. And then, as Hans has said, we got presented that to the stakeholders and got some input on that, and then we produced the report that you all saw last week or 2 weeks ago. The thing about this potential habitat breaks criteria, they really need to be simple, objective, repeatable, accurate, and things that are supported by the literature. So we also had the guidance coming from from you all that we also needed to look at gradient and width and barriers. And we dove into the literature. We were familiar with a lot of it, but we wanted to make sure that we haven't missed anything that's come out recently or something that's very old that might be relevant. But it became pretty clear in looking at the literature that really it comes down to this definition of potential habitat break. The thing that's supported is gradient, channel width, and permanent natural barriers. Now, I know that's probably not a big surprise, but there were a lot of other things that people have talked about using, channel type, other ecological indicators, and really there just isn't much to support the use of those or that would meet these criteria that's going to be, you know, repeatable, objective, accurate. So we really focused on those three criteria. So the next step was really let's look at some, you know, let's look at the existing data that's been collected on end of fish habitat and look at those data sets and see if they tell us what the thresholds should be or they give us and inform us some. We'd already come up with some ideas of what we thought the criteria should be based on the literature and our experience. And so we collated those existing data and we asked folks, Hans asked folks from the different caucuses to provide data. We went through and reviewed those data, which came from a whole variety of sources. I think we had at least 12 different data sets. It's in the table in the report. The biggest challenge is that what we needed in those data sets was consistent information. They had to have upstream channel gradient, downstream channel gradient, they had to have channel width, they had to have information on the barriers. We had to know where they were at, so some data sets didn't have township and range for some of the locations. They had the stream name, but that doesn't necessarily help us. So we went through those data sets and couple really high quality data sets. We had the data set from the landowners, which I want to say was about 1,500 data points. And then we had a small number of data provided from the Upper Columbia. I think there was just like 10 sites in Northeast Washington. And so the one thing I want to say that came out in looking at these data is people don't collect these things consistently. So gradient and channel width, all the different data sets collected those differently. And that really pointed that one of the things that has to come out of this is there's got to be some consistent guidelines how to measure channel width. Are we talking wetted width? Because some had wetted width, some had channel width, and some had bankful width. And channel width and bankful width sound like they should be the same, but they're technically different things. So it really points to one of the things down the road with the follow-up study or with whatever's implemented. There's got to be some clear criteria on how to measure these things and what's the distance you're going to measure gradient. So we used the data, and we really, you know, this came down, like I said, it's mostly data that was provided by the landowners. It's about 1,500 points. I don't think it's all data that are from private lands, but that's the data that was met the criteria that we needed. And we used that data a couple ways. One, we had, you know, there's some default physical criteria that were, I think it's 20% gradient and 2 foot width is a potential habitat break, so we could look at those. But we also had, based on looking at the literature and our experience, we had some ideas of some proposed criteria. So we used those criteria to test, we could test those against the data that we have. And then looking at the data, it gives us an idea of, hey, what might be some other options and some better ways to do this. So the data, you know, this is a distribution, those points, those black points, if you can see those, the distribution of the data, the 1,500 points we have, there's missing, there's 9 or 10 points that are up in the northeast corner of the state that didn't show up on this particular graph. You know, there's some caveats with this data, as you can see from that geographic coverage. I mean, this isn't a completely random sample or, you know, and it's not stratified by ecoregion. It's really dominant, it's mostly western, if not all, western 99.9% data from western Washington.
There's obviously, there's differences across the state in ecoregion and climate flow, geology, elevation, and other things we'd like to have, but that's not what we have. And there's differences in ownership. I don't want to spend too much time on the issues with the data, but realize it wasn't collected for our express purpose. But they were points that were concurred, type FN breaks, and they did have the habitat break, the criteria for it, and in those cases where they went further upstream and identified the last fish and hung the flag, we have those points. So it allows us to test some different scenarios, some different criteria. And this lovely table, and I give advice for people on how to give presentations, and usually it's don't stick a table from a report in the presentation. You've got the table in front of you, so I thought we were okay putting this in there. The first thing I wanted you to let me just explain the table a little bit. Really, these are all the different criteria that we looked at, the different plausible models we bought for gradient and width to define a potential habitat break, right? So the gradient metric is just, that just describes whether it was an upstream threshold, was it a difference between the upstream and downstream gradient, was it those are really the combinations. And then there's what that gradient threshold was, because we looked at 15% gradient, 20% gradient, 5%. Oh, there's a pointer here, I guess I can use. Then there's the width metric, which is, again, this is a description. Was it a threshold, an upstream threshold? Was it a ratio of the width to upstream and downstream?